originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, HRRN Nation. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, I'm Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and extending a very special welcome to each and every one of you across HRN Nation, including all of you listening live throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM channel 201 and tuned in to our free live streaming or the archive podcast of this show. You're doing that on our HRN website at horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you with me for the next hour. And before I forget, a very happy holidays to everybody throughout HRN Nation. Every week we have unique stories on this program. And yeah, the end result is the same. All of the individuals I talk to are either currently training or have trained horses at some point. And I always tell you that these are part of the cog that makes racing successful, the trainers. And their stories all seem to be similar in ways and completely different in ways. And I think you're going to find that here tonight as well, as we welcome another distaffer to the program. Tonight's guest is a native of Lambourne, England. She began her training career last year. She won 18 of her 94 starts in 2018. This year, she's racked up 47 victories, including a milestone win in last Saturday's Grade 3 Sugar Swirl Stakes at Gulfstream Park, her first career graded stakes win, and she did it with a horse by the name of Ladies Island, who was a 6 3/4 length wire-to-wire victor under MSCL Jaramillo, and she is with me now. She is trainer Georgina Baxter here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Georgina, welcome to the program.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. And as I was getting ready for the program, I started reading through some of the information that's out there. And one of the articles that was written about you on a website called Past the Wire, and there was so much information, and I was so blown away by your story and your background and your experiences. But before we get to all of that, and we will, let's start with that victory in the Sugar Swirl last weekend. What a performance and what a moment for you.
I know. We're still, the whole barn is still on cloud nine about it. I mean, she's just been such a good filly to us, especially this year. You know, she's won 8 out of 9. And, she had her first graded stakes victory on Saturday. But, that's her third stakes win. I mean, she's won on the turf. She's won on the dirt. She's won on the slop. I mean, she's just it was a great filly to do it with, and she's one of my personal favorites. For other reasons too. I mean, she's a really nice filly to have in the barn, and I was happy to, achieve that with her.
Yeah, the moment when she crosses the finish line and you realize, okay, she just won her first graded stakes. So did you. What was that moment like?
I actually probably ran the last half furlong as fast as her in my heels. I'm kind of famous for it. I had a very sore throat afterwards, and I mean, I just think there's not a feeling like it. I think that's what, racing's about. There's not a feeling like in a race, whether you're riding a winner, was on the horse, or, whether you trained it. And I've never owned a horse, but I can imagine, it's just sheer elation. Like, there's not a feeling like it. And I think that's why we get, addicted to it, because it's just sheer pleasure. And we get so much out of it. And I think that's, people have said it before, it becomes an addiction. You get addicted, you know, it's an unbelievable feeling. And you know, we're so privileged to feel that.
We're going to hear over the course of the next hour or so that your whole life has been dedicated to horses. So I'll ask you this question. Were you more excited for you or for the horse when Ladies Island crossed the finish line first?
Of course, the horse. You are so pleased for them. And not being funny, you're just so pleased for them because they deserve it, you know. And they love it and they deserve it. You know, and then 45 minutes later, we had Trev winning Tampa. You know, we've had him, he's been in the barn longer than I have. And you're just so happy for the horses and everybody else. It's just, it's a feeling unless, you know, you really can't describe. It's absolutely unbelievable. And this is why we do it, you know, for these moments. But, you know, they just give us so much pleasure, all of them. But, the horses come first. So you're so happy for the horse.
You said Ladies Island was one of your favorites for several reasons. What are some of the other reasons that she's one of your favorites?
I know she came to the barn. You know, she was a diamond in the rough, and you know, I ride her every day, and you know, she eventually came round. You know, I used to try and give her peppermints every day, and she, you know, she didn't really want them, and you know, carrots every day, and then she started eating them, and now she's like, she's just such a happy filly in the barn. You know, she totally turned around mentally and physically. And she's just a nice filly to be around. She's nice to ride. She's nice in the stall, you know. Then all, you know, they all have their characters. But she's just a nice filly to be around. And she's big and she's beautiful. She's everything you want in a horse, really.
You talk about the excitement of winning a race. And I've owned pieces of horses. I've never ridden. I've never trained a horse. But I've owned pieces of horses. And even if you don't own 100%, it doesn't matter. Your horse crosses the finish line first. That feeling, if you could bottle it, this would be the easiest sport in the world to market. So when you win a
Correct.
Graded stakes race, I know it can go to another level, but is there a bit of a different feeling when you win a graded stakes as opposed to, let's say, a maiden special weight?
Well, I knew it was a milestone, you know. And you know, I was kind of quietly confident. I know the filly is a really good filly. And, you know, in your pressure that you put on, you know, yourself of have we got this right? And, you know, I mean, it just everything comes out. But I mean, yeah, it's obviously a milestone. And, you know, it's great for the barn. But as I said, you're more happy for the horse and the connections and everybody else, you know. But as I said, I suppose so. Just because it's a milestone. And obviously now I'm, you know, obviously getting attention for it. You know, it brings awareness. So you know it's important, you know, but they're all important. But I suppose, yes, I have to say a little bit.
Yeah, I mentioned the quick start to your career and all of the victories that you've had just since starting last year. What do you attribute that to, Georgina? Why have you been able to get off to such a quick start?
Well, you know, I've been offered horses before to train, and I'd never really, it was four or five horses. And a situation, you know, arose last year where Richard Averill approached me. You know, he said, you know, I'm going to have to disperse the barn. The horses are going to have to, send them off to different trainers. You know, everybody's got to find another job. I mean, we want to keep the barn together. I've done this before, and it's not been very successful. And I said, well, you know, I have my trainer's license. He goes, you do? And I said, yeah, I took my trainer's test. I took the course in Churchill years ago. I said, I took my trainer's test. And he said, do you think you can make it happen? And I really didn't have that much time to think about it because I probably would have said no. But I was like, I just wanted to keep the horses together. You know, as I said, we have Trev. He's been in the barn for years. You don't want to see those horses to go anybody else. You love them. You know, they're part of your family. When you've been around a horse for 4 or 5 years, you know, you're very attached to it. And, you know, and also the staff, they're like your family, you know. So I said yes, and it happened so quickly that, you know, I didn't have a chance to really think about it. So, yeah, we just ended up, and, you know, we've had an amazing run because I think, you know, the way we're set up, we work really good as a team together, you know. And, you know, where I'm lacking, the owners, Richard Avril and Matisse, that, you know, they're very good at the form and the figures, and they're, you know, really accomplished handicappers. You know, where I'm, you know, more the horseman side of it. And I think it just works.
Yeah, you know, you don't lack in many categories, though, Georgina. You have a world of experience behind you, literally, because you've traveled the world early on in your career, even as a child. You grew up in a racing family. Take me back to the beginning and tell me about the early days of Georgina Baxter.
Well, my mom's side was a real big racing family. I mean, her father was a trainer, and previously he was a steeplechase jockey. And, you know, her great, you know, her grandfather was a trainer, and all the siblings were jockeys and trainers. And my poor dad, he was packed off. He was put on a train by his parents when he was 15 because he was so small. And, you know, he was one of 10, and they didn't have much money. And he was basically put on a train when he was 15 and told to go and become a jockey, which he did very successfully. So I was very privileged. You know, my dad was successful. I came from, you know, a good family. I had my first pony when I was 4 years old. I rode little ponies around previously. I always had ponies in the paddock, and I was brought up with horse racing people. I remember, you know, I used to always be going racing as a kid. I was, you know, Steve Corson used to come to the house and use a sauna. We had a sauna in the house. You know, I was brought up, sat on Paddy's knee, and, you know, these people were like, you know, friends of the family. It was the norm. I didn't know it was, you know, so special.
Have you talked to Steve since you've been in the United States now?
Yes, I did. I saw him at Churchill. I went up and I introduced him myself to him, and he remembers my dad. They were very good friends.
Yeah, pretty special stuff. Talking with Georgina Baxter.
Yeah, I think he's in Turfway now. But when he came to England, he was really the first, you know, breakthrough, you know, American jockey to come over. You know, so to have known him is, you know, wonderful, and he's very, you know, he's very successful in England. Well, I think he's the first one to like convert, you know, the American style, you know, and make it work in England.
Yeah, it has to be cool as a little kid to have a guy like Steve Cawthon come and hang out at your house.
It was normal. And that's what I'm saying. Now I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I was so honored and privileged. But it was normal. It was normal for me to be around those people. You know, we used to have parties and Greville Starkey and everybody. Yeah, I had a house full of them.
You know what's interesting is that even though your whole family was involved in racing on some level, or at least most of them were, Your family didn't really encourage you to get involved with racing as a career, did they?
No, not at all. They really tried to deviate me from it, you know. So basically when I, you know, I did work experience from school, and I went to a veterinary practice. And, you know, when the week finished, they asked me to stay on, you know, like go after school and weekend. So and then when I left school, I basically, you know, went there full time and, you know, worked there as a vet's assistant for 2 years. So, and then the reason I started riding again, I always had ponies and everything, but I after being a veterinary assistant, I decided to go into the therapeutic side of it. You know, a new barn had set up in, you know, Lambourne, where I'm from, and they had all the latest, you know, equipment, the water treadmills, all the latest machines and everything. So I went there as a next step. And, you know, they had a few pointers there. And, you know, I told them I could ride, and I started galloping the pointers, and that got me hooked on the riding side of it, racehorses.
Did you always know that somehow, some way, you'd be involved in racing?
Sorry?
Did you always know that somehow, some way, despite your parents not really wanting you to be involved, did you always know that you were going to be involved somehow?
Yes. Well, you always rebel against your parents. Yeah, I always had, you know, I always knew riding was a passion of mine, you know. So, yes, probably.
You know, you've mentioned your ponies a couple of times. I know that's kind of where you started, being aboard the ponies. But there was one I read about, I think his name was Tommy. Is that right?
Yes, correct, yes.
Why was he so special?
Oh, well, when I was four, they told me I was going to get a pony. I said, I want a black pony. So they went and got me a black pony. He was blind in one eye. I used to fall off him all the time. He probably taught me. And most kids, when they fall off, they don't want to get back on. I'd be like, Mummy, get me a stick. Like, that pony taught me so much. He really did, you know. I was always, you know, made me bold and brave. And, you know, I loved him. And he's actually... He was 44 when he died, and he's buried in my paddock in England.
Oh, wow.
At the top of my paddock. Yes, he's very special. I kept him from the day I got him to the day he died, yes.
Wow.
Who is your
teacher, the person you learned the most from on the riding side?
My granddad. My granddad taught me to ride, you know, obviously, when I got my ponies. My dad was always busy. He was racing all the time. So my granddad taught me to ride the ponies and, you know, how to ride and that kind of thing. But when I started riding the racehorses, it was actually, I was in a point-to-point yard. And, you know, there was an old horse there, you know, the jockey got injured. And I actually rode in a race when I was 19. And I rode a winner the second time. I mean, I don't know, when you grow up around ponies, you're on, you know, on the horses and you're doing gymkhanas and show jumping and dressaging, you know, you kind of have it. But I think when I went to the point-to-point yard and started riding racehorses, you know, that really taught me a lot, you know, and I was schooling over fences. You know, I was very young doing it. I really shouldn't have, you know, most people are older when they progress to that level. And so I think, there. And then when I went beyond the jumping and I went, you know, into flat yard, I actually, my first breeze, I led my father up the gallops on one of Mohammed Mubarak.
Oh, wow.
You know, I could ride racehorses, but, you know, I hadn't really done much. And, you know, so I went to flat barn and they stuck me on a horse and my dad coached me the whole way through the breeze. And I think a very young Frankie Dettori was sat behind him.
Come on, really?
I swear to God, yeah. I've known Frankie Dettori 27 years. He's still a very dear friend. Yes, he was in the breeze. My dad coached me the whole way through it. It was perfect.
Wow.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I think everybody you are around brings an aspect to everything you do on a horse. Like, I've learned so much from different people. And, you know, even when you think you're doing something right, somebody will, you know, you'll take something else from what somebody else does and says. You know what I'm saying? So you never stop learning in this industry, never. And when you think you know everything, you're a loser.
Did I read where your first victory or one of your first victories when you started riding came on your mom's birthday? Is that right?
Correct. My mom was actually on vacation here also on Saturday when I had my first graded stakes winner. She's very lucky.
Wow.
Yes, it was my mum's birthday. It was my second ride ever. And it was over fences. And I was on this horse. And, yeah, she was terrified because this horse was just basically jumping from outside the wings. I didn't know any better, so I just sat there on it. And, yeah, I rode a win on her birthday. She said she'd never been so scared in her life. So scared and so happy at the same time.
Yeah, she's lucky. You might want to keep her around.
Yes, I know. Yes, she was here for all the big, you know, the three winners we had already at Gulfstream. You know, because we had Thinking Cowtown in the Distaff Dash the week before in the Claiming Crown. Yeah, she's very, very lucky. She's very lucky for me anyway.
Talking with trainer Georgina Baxter here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As you can hear, her career started in her native England and has taken her all over the world, and we're going to talk more about that here in just a moment. Georgina, when you think about all of those moments that have shaped your career, one of those has to be when you got the chance to go to the Middle East and spend some time there in the Middle East. Tell me about those years.
Oh, well, you know, anybody who goes to Dubai is, you know, your mind is blown. You know, they have the best facilities and it's very luxurious. You know, you walk into the barns, they're all air-conditioned. Every, yard has a swimming pool. You know, the quality of horses, I mean, everything. I mean, you know, they've got in mind to have like the best racing over there and the best horses, but you know, time will tell if that's going to happen. You know, it's the setup is unbelievable, and yeah, like I had a great experience over there. Like I went over there for a month's vacation and I ended up staying 4.5 years.
Wow.
Yes, I literally I was over on vacation and again going back, it's always somebody you know, it's a small world. Bill Mather was training. He actually set up Nad Al Sheba Stables, and you know the race course was set up around his stables. It was one of the old established stables over there. And, you know, so he said, do you want to come in and ride out? And I went, sure. So I went in and rode out, and he said, well, you know, you ride good. Would you like to stay? And I said, yeah, sure. So, you know, I hopped on a plane to Qatar, spent an hour sat on the runway, and then flew back and got my work visa for over there. And that's where I met Peter Brett, who's been a massive influence on me, really. I mean, he took over from Bill Mather. And, you know, I had the opportunity to ride amateur against the princes over there, because, you know, obviously they're very horse orientated and they used to have a lot of amateur races over there. And I really had no intention of riding, but I found myself entered on a horse and I actually won my first race over there and my second.
Wow.
So, yeah, as I said, Peter Brett took over from him, and it's actually his fault I ended up in America, because, you know, after 4 years, there was kind of a change in, you know, they were changing barns and round and doing a lot of construction. And Peter and his wife decided to move to America. And when he left, he literally handed me an envelope and he says, there's your ticket to America. I didn't come straight to America. I actually had a bit of a detour to Australia. I spent 3 months in Australia. Worked for Graham Rogerson out there. But I eventually arrived here.
What have you learned from each of those stops along the way before you came to the United States? For example, when you were in Dubai, what were some of the key things you took from that experience? When you went to Australia, what were some of the key things that you took there that are now helping you today, Georgina?
Dubai, just to take really, you know, good care of your horses, you know, take your time. I kind of learned my first experience with, like, clocking over there, you know, and times. You know, then I went Australia. Australia, they train very different. They turn a lot of horses out, but they do a lot of gate work. So there I learned a lot about, you know, trying to get speed out the gate. They do a lot of gate work and how they go about that. And so, as I said, you wherever you go, you take something from. Even if it's bad, you learn how not to do it. Or that does not work, you know. For everywhere you go, you take something from. So it's really hard to answer that question. I mean, like, I kind of progressed. Like, I learned a little bit here and a little bit there. And, you know, it's been a progression.
One of the stories that stood out to me about your stay in Dubai, and you mentioned Peter Brett, he put you on a horse when you started riding again there by the name of High Regard. And the story behind this horse and everything that went into it, I thought was just amazing. I thought it was very, very fascinating to read this particular story. Tell me that story.
I had no intentions of riding, but Peter kept asking for my passport picture, and I was like, okay, I'll bring it in. And as I said, I found myself named on a horse, and it actually wasn't that horse for a race, but something went wrong with that one, and I ended up on this little tiny thing. He was 5 years old, never won, And he was like knee high to a grasshopper, and as amateurs, we carry more weight, you know. So, you know, not fancied at all, you know, outsider. But he's a sweet little horse. And, you know, they just basically gave it to give me a ride. So I walk in the paddock, and, you know, Erwin Sharpie, one of the top trainers over there, has a runner in the race because, you know, the princes are running. So, you know, all the top trainers try and put horses in. And the trainer turned to him and says, he says, you can't put 70, that's cruel. Anyway, I broke out in front, very American style, not Dubai style at all. I made one wire to wire, one by four lengths. So Peter Brett just turns to the trainer and said, how cool was that? So, yes. I mean, it was a great experience. And I actually thought it was a fluke. You know, the whole, you know, he never won before. So I rode him back 3 weeks later and I won again. It wasn't a fluke. He just liked me.
Yeah, the best part of the story is that the next race they put Kieran Fallon on him and he finished last.
He finished last. I don't think that's a very good compliment to me or not. The fact that he ran for me and not Kieran Fallon. Well, obviously Kieran Fallon is way more talented than I am as a rider. And I remember when that horse retired, we actually all bought a piece of him and retired him and sent him off to be a show jumper for kids.
Wow. Wow. Georgina Baxter here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Just a couple of minutes away from our commercial break here. We're going to continue to visit in the second half of the show and talk more about her experiences here in the United States. You know, your whole life has been horses and getting on horses, being around horses, whatever it might be, Georgina. If you weren't involved in this sport, as your parents might have hoped you wouldn't be, what else do you think you'd be doing?
I have absolutely no idea. And I couldn't imagine it not being around any type of horse or animal. I just couldn't imagine it. I mean, we are so blessed to be in this industry. We really are. I mean, to be around these magnificent creatures, I mean, I just feel blessed. And I don't even want to think what else I would have done, because it wouldn't have been so fulfilling, or even I wouldn't have had half the life I had without them.
Yeah, there's something about horses, and every trainer that's come on this program over the years always says, and you know, in an era and a year where there has been a lot of negative publicity for racing,
correct,
every trainer comes on and says, you know, it's about the horse. It's all about the horse.
It is. We love them. We've dedicated our lives to them, you know. As I said, I'm 45. I have no kids. I have no, you know, I'm single. My whole life revolves around them. It's a way of life. It's not a job. The horses love it. We love them. I mean, in England, the thought of, you know, the obviously what's been going on this year and the talk of, you know, racing over here, that conversation wouldn't even take place in places like Dubai or England. It's like saying you're not having turkey for Christmas, you know? It's just something it's so traditional. It's so in our history and our heritage, and we're very proud of it. And, you know, it should be the same everywhere. I mean, it's just wonderful to be around them, and, you know, and they enjoy it just as much as we do.
Well, if you can't tell, her passion is racing. Her passion is horses. We're going to continue this conversation with our special guest, Georgina Baxter, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right after this short break. Stay with me. The Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They move past the 5/16ths, and Ladies Island has widened on the front. She's now open to 6-length lead. Heaven Has My Nikki is second, a bit of both, just not comfortable today. Trying to run home from the back is long shot Pretty Greeley with Stormy Embrace through a 44 3 half mile. Ladies Island, 3/16ths from home and 7 on top. They're left in her wake. Ladies Island isolated on the top end. Jockey Jaramillo keeps her to her task, but the task has been complete as it's a gate-to-wire destruction of today's Sugar Swirl Field. It's Ladies Island dominant in victory. Second, Meadow Dance, close for third, either Pretty Greeley or Bronx Beauty in 1/10 3.
Yeah, dominant indeed. Ladies Island, 6 3/4 length victory in the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl this past week. For our special guest tonight, she is Georgina Baxter, and happy to have her with me. Going to continue the visit right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this Trainer Talk program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, it's pretty simple. All you have to do is head back over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts by going to Horse Racing Radio Network there. And you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. That milestone victory for Georgina in the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl was special. You heard her talk about that in the first half of the program. We also talked about the aspect of her early career where she traveled all over the world, including places like Dubai and Australia. What we didn't talk about was the time that she got to spend in places like India and Trinidad and Tobago. And we're going to talk about that to start the second half of the show here. Georgina, look, India, Trinidad, those had to be some special trips.
Yeah, well, I went with my father was riding over there. Before Dubai was a place to go, it used to be India or Trinidad and Tobago. And to see how they do things over there was amazing. Yes, definitely bring some more cards to the table. You know, great experience. As I said, this has been race. You know, racing has been so good to me. I mean, I've been so lucky. I've traveled the world, and you know, I've winged my life, and somehow you know everything's fallen into place for me. So I'm very blessed. I've seen all these different countries and seen all these different cultures, and it's because of you know these horses that I've been able to do that.
Yeah, what's so different about the way they do things in India and Trinidad as opposed to maybe a place like Dubai or Australia?
Well, Australia do it totally different. I never really got the system out there. I don't know if I wasn't out long enough. To be honest, a lot of the India and the Caribbean and Dubai are more India and the Caribbean, more European influence. Dubai is now more European American influenced, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, as I said, India does it very, very similar to England and the Caribbean. They kind of try and copy. Obviously, they don't have the caliber of horses, but, you know, they still love the sport. They still love the horses. You know, they still have, you know, the want to win, as we all do. And but as I said, Dubai is more half and half. It's half European, and they're very influenced by America now.
Did I read where you actually got a chance to spend some time with Walter Swinburne when you were in India?
Correct. Yes. Walter Swinburne and his parents. Yeah. I mean, what a privilege. Young Walter Swinburne. There's a story. Well, we were both young, and you know, obviously he was riding. He was at the start of his career, and you know, he comes from a big racing background, and you know, we became good friends. There's I can remember there's one story where he had E.T. and I had a Mars bar. So in exchange for him letting me watch E.T., I gave him my Mars bar, which was a treasured possession. English chocolate abroad is a treasured possession.
It sounds like a fair trade.
I mean, the guy was phenomenal. What a horseman. I mean, I've actually got the race card signed by all the jockeys from Shergar when he went on Shergar. It was actually my birthday, I don't know what year, June 3rd, and they got the race card, and every jockey in the race signed the card. And my dad was actually third that year in the race, but it was third, a long way third to Shergar.
Wow, you still have that?
I still have that. It's one of my most prized possessions. I have two of my most prized possessions is that race card and Desert Orchid, Maine. Have you ever heard of a horse called Desert Orchid?
I have not.
He is one of the most famous steeplechasers, and I have his mane, yes.
Wow, my friend Sean Clancy is going to be very disappointed in me for not knowing him.
Oh, yes, correct, yes. He's like Arkell, Desert Orchid, Red Rum. They're like the famous three.
Wow. Okay. Now,
he was white.
One of the places that we get to broadcast from each year, one of my favorite venues, is a little track by the name of Garrison Savannah in Barbados. And I know that you're familiar with it because you were in Barbados for a little bit too.
Correct. I was at that racetrack.
Yeah. Great
place. I've been there. Yes. I mean, it's as I said, it's such a small world, and the atmosphere there, it's unbelievable. As I said, like, they love their racing. They get really into it. That's the only thing in America I find really embarrassing is that there's me hollering at the, you know, screaming at the top of my voice, and everybody, you know, because I'm used to those countries where we scream and we holler for our horses, you know, and over here they're a little silent and a little, you know, me, I still go back to those days.
Yeah, when we broadcast the Barbados
really into it.
Gold Cup, I can remember the first year we did it, and after the horse crossed the wire, people were literally running onto the turf course to try to high-five the jockey after the finish line. I'd never seen anything like that in my life.
Oh, no. Yeah. As I said, I find myself, like, I think I'm, like, toning it down by not doing stuff like that, but you know, I'm still very... over here, you know, I'm still running down the racetrack, you know, not the actual racetrack, the side of the racetrack, you know, screaming for my horses, and, you know, everybody else is, like, stood there just watching, and, you know, as I said, those places, they get really into their racing, and it's great to see, you know.
Well, if you
I think everybody should go to the Garrison Savannah in Barbados.
Yeah, it's
special. It's definitely an experience. It's very special.
Next time you're at Gulfstream Park, if you get the chance to see Saffy Joseph Jr., go say hello to him. I don't know if you know him, if you've met him at all.
I know him, yes.
Yeah, great.
I'm very happy for him. He's doing so well.
Phenomenal.
And he has to probably have one of the claims of the year with his horse.
Yeah, the horse that ran the Breeders' Cup, yeah.
Correct. Yeah,
spectacular. He's done so much good. And his father, Big Saf,
you know,
obviously both from Math Wizard. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Both from Barbados and, just great people. Now, when you came here, Georgina, by the way, talking with Georgina Baxter on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, you worked with Michael Matz for some time, right?
Well, as I said, it was Peter Brett. As I said, when I was leaving Dubai, he handed me an envelope and he says, "There's your ticket to America." And it literally was. And when I came over, he was working, and he was actually galloping Barbara at the time. And I came into the country. I only just got into the country, actually. I had my visa. We'd done a visa properly. But Peter Brett forgot to give me his address where I was going to be living. And they literally wanted to put me on the next plane home because I didn't have a stable address, and I was saying all the wrong things. They were like, "Oh, it's okay, I'll be moving around with the horses." That's apparently not what they want to hear. So I was very lucky, and my visa got denied, and I ended up just getting in on a holiday visa. I said, "Oh, well, you know, I'll just go and have 3 months of fun." And so went to Michael Matz. What a start. I mean, it was cold. It was at Fairgrounds. It's got to be one of the coldest places ever in the winter.
Yeah.
But luckily they were, you know, in the process of moving to Florida. So, yeah, I got to work with Michael Matz. I mean, went on the whole Barbaro journey. I think he'd ran once by the time I arrived in America. And I actually got to gallop him. He was absolutely... He's one horse. I mean, I think, like, good horses, like, have this presence or aura around them. I don't know if I sound crazy by saying that, but this horse was just had such a presence. And, like, even to gallop him, you know, he literally made the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. He was an incredible animal to be around. And, yeah, I've got to work. And, I mean, what a first job to go on, you know, that ride. And, I mean, he had loads of other horses. I used to ride a really good mare called Sangrita and Rastafarian. And, you know, obviously work with Peter. And Peter helped me because... You know, he knew the American way, but he also understood, you know, how to tell me things. I mean, we don't know what a 16th pole is when we arrive here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely different. Georgina Baxter here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. So you talked about being aboard Barbaro and how special that was. Did you go to the Kentucky Derby with him? Were you there?
I was actually there. Yeah, I was on the backside, correct. What an amazing feeling. I mean, unbelievable. I was so happy for the horse. I was so happy for Michael. Michael is one of the nicest people you will ever meet. And what a story he has. I mean, another one. Unbelievable story. You know, he's world championship show jumper, trained a Kentucky Derby winner. You know, he went on that you know, unfortunate ride with Barbaro, but also, what a blessing to have that horse. And
walked away from a plane crash, too, right?
He survived a plane crash, too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. But, I was there. I was so happy. As I said, you're happy for everybody else first, you know, the horse and the connections. I was so happy for Peter. You know, Peter used to gallop him most of the time, and what a great job they did, you know.
Yeah, the Barbaro situation and everything he went through, that was very difficult, not only on Michael and the team, but certainly on you, and it was very difficult for you to get past, wasn't it?
Yeah, very difficult. I mean, when you're basically around a horse of a lifetime, I mean, you know, to be around a horse like that is, we know, you know, from being around so many horses, thousands of horses, that, you know, those horses don't come along. And when you've got that opportunity to be around a horse like that, and it's like a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and that happens, it totally guts you. You know, it just totally... You don't even want to get on another horse because you don't know what's the point. You know, if this happened, what's the point? And, you know, and I mean, our whole nation was heartbroken, and they didn't know him. We knew him and were personal, and it's... You know, it was very, very emotional, you know, and very, very hard to deal with. You know, they're like family members to us. And, I you know, it's hard to get up again, you know, from something like that.
Yeah, it's a game that we often say has the highest highs and the lowest lows. And you know,
Correct. You know,
both of those, and Michael knows both of those. And it's just one of those things that's so unfortunate and so heartbreaking. In the game.
So,
where did you go after you worked with Michael Matz, Georgina?
I then went to Eddie Keneally's, where all Europeans seem to go.
Everybody goes there, don't they?
Everybody goes, yeah. I think it's because he understands us, our accents, and we understand him. I don't know. But yeah, it seems to be a path of everything. I mean, you know, Brendan Walsh was there when I was there. I worked with Brendan for a couple of years. I mean, yeah, they were all there.
Well, and you got to be aboard some other good horses with Eddie, too.
Correct, yes. I used to ride Kelly's Landing a lot, you know, the Gentle Giant, and he won loads of races. He had the track record at Churchill, and he won the Dubai Sprint. I mean, with Frankie Dettori on top, doesn't everything go around?
Wow.
Yeah, so... great experience, learned a lot from him. He's a great horseman. He gives you a really, really good foundation. Learned how to really, really gallop horses there, and being at Churchill, you know, very busy track. You know, we train so different in England. It's a very relaxed atmosphere and, you know, very, very calm. Over here, it's very hustle and bustle. There's horses galloping by you all the time, you know. But really learned how to gallop and, you know, really convert my European style to my American style. You know, I have Eddie Keneally a lot to thank for that. And I think he's done that for a lot of people. So
yeah, he has. He's one of the true good guys in the game.
He gives you a really good foundation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you go from...
And he makes you tough because he's very sarcastic.
You have to know how to take Eddie sometimes.
Yes, you do. Yeah, I was there 4.5 years. So I took him pretty good. I'm pretty hard. only the strong survive there.
You go from Barbaro to horse like Kelly's Landing, and then you end up working with Al Stahl Jr., and Al puts you on a horse by the name of Blame. You did pretty good there.
As I said, I've been absolutely blessed in this industry. I mean, how lucky is that? I mean, I go to Al Stahl for the winter in fairgrounds because, you know, wanted to go see what New Orleans is like. Absolutely fantastic place. People are great. There's America and then there's New Orleans. It's totally different. I think everybody has to go there once and experience it. But, I ended up on a horse called Blame. I breezed him a few times, and what a horse. He was just, you know, Barbara was flashy. Blame was workmanlike, you know. He went out there, and he did exactly what you wanted him to do, you know, in a breeze. He did, every horse is different. I mean, he was just so workmanlike. And, you know, we had Star Guitar while I was there. He's a very good trainer, very good horseman, you know. And he keeps reproducing every year these good horses. So, you know, again, what you take from these people, you just take, you know, even if you take a little bit, you take something good from it, you know.
Where did
the way
journey,
he conditions his horses.
Where did the journey take you after Al Stahl?
Al Stahl, I actually went back to Eddie Keneally's.
Okay.
And that's when I took Aspire to... Santa Anita Breeders' Cup, Year Zenyatta one. And the reason I want to mention that is because I don't know, that's probably one of my most memorable experiences here in America was when Zenyatta won the Breeders' Cup Classic. I don't know. I mean, you know, I've been to several Kentucky Derbies. You know, the crowds roar, they cheer. There was nothing. There was something magic that day. And I think everybody who was there when Zenyatta won the Breeders' Cup Classic felt it, you know. It was an unbelievable experience, and I'm blessed to have been there.
Yeah, there have been a couple of moments like that that I can remember in terms of what we do and broadcasting those races on the radio, Georgina. That was certainly
magical.
One of them. We were there. We provided the radio broadcast and just the, you know, the excitement level building up to it and then the roar from the crowd. We were positioned out back by the paddock area, but you could you could feel it. You know, you could almost feel the ground shake.
I mean, everybody wanted that to happen. And everybody, you know, they didn't want to say otherwise, but did they believe it could happen? It happened. And the whole place, it was magical. And you know, you can take glimpses of it, but that for me was a real good experience. You know, one of my favorite experiences here in America was Zenyatta won the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Those moments,
and I think
when
anybody who was there feels the same.
Yeah, those moments
very special.
When the girls beat the boys in a big race like that. I can go back to our first ever national broadcast that we did when Rags to Riches beat Curlin in the Belmont Stakes, and that was a ground-shaking type of moment. And then Rachel Alexandra beating the boys in the Woodward at Saratoga.
Correct.
That was another moment that you just thank yourself for being part of the sport.
Yeah, there's something about the girls beating the boys. It really is.
It is. It's the girl power thing.
There is something about it.
Yep. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Talking with Georgina Baxter here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Hey, on the training side of things, you're a girl beating up on the boys now. How cool is that?
Very. Yeah, I like it. I prefer my horse. Actually, that was a big moment for us when Ladies Island stepped up. I mean, we had the favorite on the turf in the Bob Humphreys, 5 furlongs on the turf, and obviously Penny Price, he's another star in the barn. That horse probably changed my life. And he came off the turf, and how often when when a race comes off the turf, are you in a even better position to win it with a filly? And I think beating the boys in that race was like that, you know, that put Ladies Island on the map, that race.
There's no doubt
about
it.
And everybody, you know, she just showed how good and courageous she was that day.
I'm glad you brought up the name Pay Any Price, because that was a horse that meant an awful lot to you and to your career. Tell me that story.
Well, you know, he came to the barn and he had a really bad reputation. You know, he'd run for $8,000. You know, he was a bit of a rogue, couldn't train him. And somebody once said to me, you know, if we can ever get this horse to train, he's a freak, but you know, we can't get him to train. So, you know, he came to the barn. I wasn't getting on him. They were, you know, maybe scared to put me on him. I don't know. But eventually it came round. And, you know, me being European and a girl and stubborn, I mean, I just, you know, we thought outside the box with him. And we actually got him going, and he turned into a pretty decent animal, pretty decent racehorse. I mean, he holds a track record here. He's a world record holder. He's run the fastest 5 furlongs ever, 53-2. I mean, he's won 8 stakes races for us, 12 races in total. I mean, he's probably the reason I got the job, because, you know, Rich sat up and took notice, and, you know, that horse probably is the reason I got the job.
Yeah, you have a reputation for being very good with horses that are somewhat unruly. How come?
I think that's what you learn in, you know, the roots. You know, thinking outside the box, doing things different. You know, anybody can ride a horse. There's thousands of people, you know, whiz around the racetrack on horses. I think, you know, when you get inside them and ride their brain and try and work them out and just do things, and not being scared of doing things different, you know. You know, everybody thought we was, you know, I look stupid out there on Pay Any Price, but, you know, who's looking stupid now? You know, that kind of thing. you know what I'm saying? It's just trying to take every horse individually, you know, ride their brain and try and work them out. And, you know, that's basically it. And that comes from your roots. That comes from when you first started.
Do you get on all your horses now that you're training?
Yeah, correct, yes.
You do. I've asked trainers this before.
I still go on Pay Any Price. Pay Any Price is going to be running in, if he doesn't run in 28th of December, he's going to be running in January.
Oh, good. What's the biggest, I don't even know if it's an advantage, but the biggest benefit to you being on your own horses in the morning?
Oh, I think it's a huge advantage. I mean, one, it's the only way I know. I can feel how they're traveling over the ground. I can feel if they're well. I mean, one thing I want to say is I work for a trainer, Kirk Zadie.
Yep.
I worked for him for years. Great horseman. I don't care what people say. He loved his horses. You know, his horses always looked impeccable on the racetrack. They always had the shiniest coats. They're in the best condition. You know, and he treated his 6250 horses like they were, you know, they were the Derby winners. And, you know, he always told me, like, happy horses win races. And it's like us, you know, when we go to work, if you're happy, you work harder, you get better results, you know, you're enjoying it. And it's the same with horses, you know. I can tell when they're well. I can tell when they're feeling good. I can tell the way they're traveling over the ground. It's a huge advantage, but then, you know, you can't get too big, because you're not doing it yourself, you know?
Yeah. How many horses do you have now, Georgina?
I have 20 here at Gulfstream, and I have 15 at a training center.
Wow,
where
that's
we
a good
go
number.
To, you know, Tampa and the layups and the 2-year-olds are bored on. Yeah, so, yeah, I get on like 90% of the horses myself that are at Gulfstream. Very busy. I get on like 11, 12 every morning.
What's the goal moving forward? How many do you want to have?
I have no real... I don't think things through. I've never had a plan in life. I've never had an ambition in life. I've kind of winged my life. And I really don't know. I'm still winging it. And at the moment, that's a perfect amount, you know, for me. You know, we're having success with it. We've got more quality, not quantity. And, you know, the owners are enjoying it. You know, my main, Rich owns, 99% of the barn. And we're all enjoying it at the moment. So I'm not really going to guess, you know, where we're going to go. I mean, hopefully we can just carry on as we're going.
Yeah, the whole winging it approach is working. It's worked for you
throughout
your entire life.
Everything fits. Like, I ride them. I tell him when they're ready to run. You know, he finds the races. We're a really, really good team. The chemistry seems to be right, and I think that's why it works. You know, the chemistry's right.
Yeah, down to our final couple minutes here in the program, talking with Georgina Baxter. It's been a delight to hear her story over the course of the past hour or so here on Trainer Talk. Georgina, I always like to wrap up the show by switching gears a little bit and asking trainers to kind of tell us something about themselves that we haven't already talked about. So, for example, if there's something else that you enjoy doing outside of racing, any other hobbies, any other sports that you might follow, anything like that, is there anything that Georgina enjoys doing outside of the sport of thoroughbred racing?
Well, this is your life. So at the moment, no, I don't have time, but I was always very, very good at sports. I was always a good runner. I was always a good tennis player. I love playing tennis. You know, I'm English. I like to go out and have a nice dinner and a few bottles of wine. I love all animals. I rescue, I foster. I have rescue dogs at the moment. I love to travel. And I think traveling is what has made, you know, being around the horses has allowed me to do that. So, you know, I love travel. You know, I've been all around America. I've been halfway around the world, and I love it. I love different cultures. I love the fact that one minute I'm speaking to a millionaire, and the next minute I'm speaking to somebody who, you know, has come from nothing and grooms a horse, and having is equal, enjoyable conversation and company with either or. Just basically... That's it.
Yeah, she's incredible. She's Georgina Baxter, one of the bright stars in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Look for more from her up the road, no doubt. Georgina, can't thank you enough for spending the time with me here tonight. Really appreciate it, and all the best moving forward.
No, thank you. Thank you very, very much.
All right, Georgina Baxter. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.